Well, welcome again to Tigard Community Friends Church. It's good to be here together today. And I have the blessing of being able to share the message, as Tammy announced earlier. And I'm doing something sort of unusual in terms of the message today. I picked a sermon that I wrote in 1995. Yes. That's when you graduated from high school. I was just going to ask the question, you know, we don't have enough time to go around the room, right? But where were you living in 1995, right? Were all of you born by 1995? I think so. No, they're in the back row. Okay, that's all right. This is a long time ago. This is like 27 years ago. All of my children were under 10 at the time. I was also thinking, my first computer I owned in 1994. So I had only been using a computer for a year, and this was made on that computer. And then, you know, the original file for this is on what they used to call a floppy disk. And I'm pretty sure I cannot open that file anymore. I just don't have the technology to do it. Maybe you could help me, Aaron. Maybe together we could figure it out. But I know on my own, I could not open this thing up. So how times have changed, right? In 27 years. And yet I picked this sermon for today because it's a sermon that's been on my mind here lately. I don't know why. But it's still a sermon. As I got it out and I read it over, I found that it still speaks to me. This was written during a time when Tammy and I and our family were missionaries in Peru, South America, and we have someone from Peru here today, Amanda, a good friend of Elaine and Bob. Yesterday, we had a gathering in memory of Bob Goodwin over at Claim Jumper. And there I saw Amanda. We had met before several years ago, but she actually lives in the United States in Florida, and I think is headed back there today, right? But I had no clue you were coming this morning. And this is a message that talks about Peru. So you picked a good Sunday to come and visit us. I think you picked a good Sunday. We'll wait and see what the message says. But we were missionaries in Peru during that time. And back in those days, the missionaries, we would serve on the field for 3 years. We called that a term of service. So we would do 3 years, and then we'd come back to the States. And we would be here for a year, which was good for families because we could put our kids in school in the fall, and they could do a whole school year here in the United States. And so during that year, though, we would go and visit different churches in what we call Northwest Yearly Meeting, this group of friends' churches here in the Pacific Northwest, in the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And so I would need to prepare a message, you know, for those churches. And so this was the message that I preached that year as I went from church to church. And the title of the message here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to preach it like it was 1995, okay? And I'm going to make very few comments about it until I get to the end. And then I want to reflect a little bit, 27 years later, okay? So it's a little bit different approach to the message this morning. This is how it starts. It does not start in Peru. It starts in the Philippines, actually. When a North American travels overseas to the underdeveloped nations of the world, one of the first to welcome him or her is sometimes a beggar. I can still remember picking up my luggage at the Manila airport in the Philippines and being greeted by a little boy. He must have been like maybe 10 years old or so. He flashed me a winsome smile and eagerly offered to help me find the bus that was to take me to my hotel. I was a college student at the time and very unsuspecting, so I happily obliged him, thinking to myself that these Filipinos are so friendly and so helpful. After my bags were stowed on the bus, and just as I was to climb aboard, I noticed the little boy's hand reaching out to me with a palm upraised. And I figured out very quickly he was not waiting for a high five, right? He wanted something from me. Culture shock hit me like a bolt of lightning. I did not give the boy anything, and I boarded the bus in a state of confusion. I found a seat by the window and plopped down. When I turned to look out the window, guess who was there? The eyes that just moments ago had been alive with a boyish excitement were now staring up at me with a very mournful, accusing look. How do you think that made me feel? How would you have felt, you know, if you were sitting in that seat at that moment? Well, I have lived a total of 13 years. Remember, this was written in 1995. I've lived a total of 13 years in the country of Peru, South America. For 7 of those years, I was a missionary kid. And the other 6 have been spent as a missionary in that country. Peru, like the Philippines, is a country that is in the process of development. It is what they call a third world nation, or at least they used to call it a third world nation, like the Philippines. During my years in Peru, I've seen beggars of all ages. And I wish I could say, you know, that I have always had a good response to those who have asked me for things over the years, but it was always something difficult for me to know exactly how to respond and how to be of help. But it's not just the beggars that bothered me, whether it was the Philippines or the Peru. I mean, the poverty was for real. And the poverty, to me, was very disturbing. According to recent estimates, again, this is 1995, keep that in mind. According to recent estimates, about half of all Peruvians live below the poverty level. About a quarter of the population lives in what is called destitution. A country study of Peru, prepared by the U.S. Federal Research Division of the Library of Congress, defines destitution as income so low that it could not provide adequate nutrition even if all of that money was spent entirely on food. Under such a scenario, all able-bodied members of the family are forced to work, and they cannot be choosy about the kind of work that they get, right? Just anything that's available. Their main concern is just to survive. Well, the people that we worked with in Peru, who made up the Peru Friends Church, they were at the bottom of the socioeconomic rung of Peru. They were the Aymara tribe that lived up in the highlands of Peru, and some of them were in Arequipa, Peru, where we started our missionary service. So these were people who were very familiar with poverty, being at the bottom of the socioeconomic rung. So when I read statistics on Peru's economic situation, I see faces, right? I see faces. I know their names. I work with them. We have fellowship together. The burden for survival that they carry weighs heavily upon me also, for I have grown to love them. Since the first Friends missionaries arrived to Peru in 1961, the goal has been to establish a group of churches there that are self-governing, self-supporting, and self-propagating. That was the goal from the very beginning. Self-governing, self-supporting, and self-propagating. That kind of church in mission circles is called the indigenous church. It's from there. It's led by the local leadership. It's sustained by them. That's an indigenous church. The Friends' mission has been like a mother who bears a daughter, cares for her, trains her, watches her grow up, and looks forward to the day when she will have children of her own. Been what it's been like as missionaries there in Peru. And in 1995, I said in this sermon, we are pleased with the progress made towards self-government. Peruvian friends see the church as theirs and are taking responsibility for it. They are the ones who are in charge. They're organized. They know how to govern their own churches. We are also pleased with the progress made towards self-propagation. This self-propagation means evangelism and church planting. I said the mission no longer enters new areas to plant churches by itself. Missionaries now work alongside Peruvian friends, and many times missionaries are behind the scenes when it comes to opening up new works. We believe that friends in Peru are well on their way to becoming a missionary sending body themselves someday. That someday missionaries will not come from the States. They'll also come from Peru, right? The desire and the vision is certainly there. So self-government, self-propagation, doing well in 1995. But I said, but we continue to struggle with the whole area of self-support. And it's pretty easy to understand why, right? Besides the poverty, and probably because of it, there's also tends to be a mentality among many in Peru that I am poor, therefore I am helpless. I am poor, therefore I am helpless. You, however, as the one who comes from America, you are rich. It would only be right for you to help me. So this mentality exists pretty widely in Peru, and it's no surprise that sometimes we found this kind of thinking in the church itself. So that was hard. That was hard to struggle with that dynamic while we were there. You can imagine the awkward position that missionaries found themselves in. On the one hand, we were committed to helping the church become self-supporting. We believed that it was crucial to the health of the Peruvian Friends Church that it become self-supporting. Dependence on foreign funds does not help a church to mature any more than dependence on your parents' money, right, helps you to become a responsible young adult. It's kind of the same dynamic. How can Peruvian friends have full control of their own affairs as long as they are financially tied to the apron strings of the mission? That was the difficulty. That was the dilemma that we were in. On the other hand, we know what life is like for our brothers and sisters in Peru. As Christians, we feel compelled to help those who have so little, who struggle to make a living. We feel compelled to help. So we constantly struggle with how to support them, how to walk that fine line between loving them and helping them with their needs, and on the other hand, encouraging self-support. It was not an easy walk. And I said here, needless to say, we are looking for missionary candidates of the caliber of Solomon to help us sort that out, you know, to figure out the best way to do this. As I preach this, I'm aware of others here in this congregation who have lived in countries like that, not Peru, but other places. And I'm sure that you have faced some of the same dilemmas as you've been serving in those places and among those people. There is a great irony in all of this. Peru is one of the poorest countries of the world. This is 1995 that I'm saying this. And yet it is also rich, rich in natural resources. Rich in natural resources. This is true of so many countries, isn't it? Rich in natural resources. The farmer who scratches out a living on his plot of ground lifts his eyes to the mountains just full of minerals, right? The children who yearn for some fruit to eat are only a few hundred miles from the jungle where fruit lies rotting on the ground. The beggar who takes up his post on the dock has his back to an ocean teeming with marine life. There is so much wealth, natural wealth, in those countries. Peru's natural resources either lie undeveloped or they are exploited by Peruvians and or other nations that do not care about those who live there. It seems a shame that there should be so much poverty in a land that is so rich. In 1874, an Italian naturalist by the name of Antonio Raimondi described Peru as a beggar sitting on a gold bench. A beggar sitting on a gold bench. The metaphor still fits all these years later. A beggar sitting on a gold bench. Now, switching away from that focus to a more personal focus, in this message, I say, I asked Jesus to come into my heart many, many years ago and embarked on a journey with him that I'm still on. Along the way, I have sensed his presence in my life and have experienced him guiding my footsteps. I have received blessings from him that I'm sure I don't deserve. The journey, on the one hand, has been wonderful. I use the word wonderful, underlined. It has been wonderful. But on the other hand, the journey has also been painful. Again, it's another interesting dynamic, isn't it? In our walk with the Lord, it can be so wonderful and also so painful at the same time. It seems like the better I have gotten to know Jesus, the more I have become acquainted with myself. And it's kind of like what happened to Isaiah when he had a vision of the Lord seated on a throne, high and exalted. You remember Isaiah's response? Did he shout, "Glory, hallelujah"? No. He said, "Woe to me," right? "Woe to me, I am ruined." That vision of the Lord, that was his response. "Woe to me, I am ruined." The closer I have drawn to the light of Jesus, the more I have beheld what is in me. His light has been shining on me, right? And I've been able to see things in myself that are difficult to see. On several occasions, I've had to agree with the word of the Lord to the prophet Jeremiah. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. I don't know why I had this crazy idea that the road gets easier the more spiritually mature you become, that the road gets easier. I don't know where I got that idea. I see many of you smiling there. You know what I mean. So I've concluded that I think God is more like a surgeon who keeps digging deeper and deeper in order to get all the cancer. And the deeper he goes, the more painful it gets, right? I think that's been the painful part of the journey for me, is all that digging that the great surgeon is doing in my own life. And wouldn't you know it, my experience as a missionary has been much the same way. I used to think that once I pile up a bunch of knowledge and experience, this missionary thing is going to be easy. But what do you think happened? What I've found so far is that the longer I am a missionary, the more convinced I am that I don't have what it takes to be one. And I'm not referring to the language, like I can't learn the language. I can speak Spanish. So language, I'm not talking about language, nor am I talking about the skills that I need, like teaching or preaching. I can do those things. It's not that at all. But when it comes to changing somebody's life, when it comes to changing somebody's life or turning a church around, a sick church, Dan Kamek is helpless. I learned that rather quickly. Dan Kamek is pretty helpless when it comes to helping someone change their life, change their direction, or even a church. And interestingly enough, when we retired from missionary service and I served as a pastor here for 10 years, I wouldn't say that this was a sick church, but as a pastor, you know, I had responsibility for people, or I felt a responsibility to help people in the congregation, and I struggled with the same thing. As a pastor, I don't have the power to change anybody, right? I can only come alongside and do what I can. But that didn't make me feel so good, right? I would like to have that power, you know, to change people, but I don't. And I don't think I'm supposed to, right? I don't think I'm supposed to, but I had that desire. It seems like most of my prayers begin with the word help. It makes no difference whether I'm praying for myself or for other people. Does anyone in this room identify with me at this point? Yeah. Recently, I've begun to suspect that I am a beggar seated on a gold bench. That's where this is leading. I came to that conclusion during this year. I am a beggar seated on a gold bench. That metaphor seems to fit more than just the country of Peru. It fits me. Maybe it fits you as well. I think that I'm only beginning to understand what it means to be in Jesus Christ. I'm pretty used to being a beggar, and I'm just now beginning to notice the gold bench. John 15:5 has been calling out to me lately. I am the vine. You are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Or if a woman remains in me and I in her, she will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do, what did Jesus say? Apart from me, you can do nada, nothing, right? Zero. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Watchman Nee, in his book, The Normal Christian Life, pointed me to this verse. It's found in 1 Corinthians 1:30. It is because of him, God, that you are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God. That is our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. Christ is our righteousness. Christ is our holiness. Christ is our redemption. And God has placed us, has placed him in our lives to be those things. So Jesus Christ is everything that I want to be, right? Jesus Christ is everything I want to be. If Jesus is in me, and I am in Jesus, why don't I just let him be my righteousness, my holiness, and my redemption? How many times have I begged God to make me holy, right? To make me holy. Well, God will never offer me any other solution than Jesus Christ, because Jesus Christ is my holiness. He is my righteousness. Jesus is still the way, the truth, and the life. So I believe that what we need most is to live like this is true. We don't have to live out the rest of our days as beggars. By faith, we can be clothed with the riches that God has showered upon us in Jesus Christ. We will find that in Jesus, we have everything that we need. In Jesus, we have everything that we need. That might seem too simple, but I believe it is that simple. We humans are the ones who complicate things, right? By trying to live the Christian life in our own way, in our own efforts. My prayer for each of us is that we will reach the point of being able to say, along with the Apostle Paul, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Galatians 2:20. So that was basically the message that I preached in 1995. Now I just want to share a few reflections 27 years later. And I'll start with where the sermon started, with Peru. 27 years later, Peru, to me, seems like a different place in many respects. There's still poverty there, just like there is in every country. Even here in the United States, right, we see poverty. So Peru is not alone in this. But thank the Lord, there has been significant progress in Peru, economically speaking, for most people. It seems like they are better now than they were 27 years ago. That's been my observation as I've gone back and visited. And I was there in January of this year. The other thing that I'll mention before I share what happened in January of this year. In 2002, my family, we were the last missionaries to leave Peru. So for 20 years now, the Peru Yearly Meeting has not had any mission help. And they've not had any of our finances either. They learned. Even though they were at the bottom of the socioeconomic scale, they learned how to give and how to take care of their own needs. And so, to me, it has been refreshing to go back and visit. And in January of this year, when I went, one of my former students was the one who picked me up at the airport, and he had a car. It used to be that only the missionaries had a car, but he had a car. And he's not the only one who has their own vehicles. And it was a very nice car, too, very comfortable. And so that was a new experience for me, to be picked up at the airport by one of our believers who has a car. The other thing that really spoke to me was I visited another former student in his home. They invited me over for breakfast. And after breakfast and after our visit together, he handed me a little square piece of paper that had been folded several times. And he said, "Here, Pastor, I'd like you to have this." And he didn't tell me what it was. So after I left, I unfolded it, and I found 200 soles. That's the national currency. 200 soles in there. He gave me an offering. He gave me money. It used to be the other way around. And 200 soles is probably like $60 or something like that. And I applied it to my hotel bill that evening. I was blessed, economically speaking, by this brother in Christ. So it just signs of how the Lord has worked in the hearts and minds of our Peruvian brothers and sisters who still don't have a lot, but what they have, they are trying to be good stewards and trying to make the best use of it. And it's a blessing to go back and just see how they continue to grow. They have their challenges too. You know, no group of churches is perfect. But when I go, most of the time, I come back very encouraged by what I'm seeing. And now, as you know, I'm still in missions. After pastoring here for 10 years, I went back into missions with Evangelical Friends Missions. And these experiences are serving me well as I work with mission fields in different parts of the world, especially those in Asia, places like Nepal, Bhutan, Bangladesh, India, where we're going through some of the very same things that I describe here in this sermon. I still ask for wisdom every time, because each situation is a little bit different. But these were important lessons that I learned in Peru that continued to serve me well. Here's my last reflection on the more personal side. Do I still feel like a beggar seated on a gold bench 27 years later? And the answer is yes. The answer is yes. I express in this sermon my personal desire to become more like Jesus. Well, how's that coming, Dan, right? How's that coming? 27 years? We should be able to notice a difference. At this point, I should probably invite Tammy up so she could share her observations. But we're running out of time, so we're not going to take that step. I'll just say, you know, I wish I could see the difference in me like I can see in Peru right now. I think for me, it's been a slower process in many ways. And maybe you can relate to this too. Real change, real profound transformation, it takes time, doesn't it? There may be moments along the way where there are some breakthroughs, some significant breakthroughs, but often it's just the day-to-day, just trying to be faithful, trying to be open. I don't know about you, you know, but I notice more and more in myself, you know, just these strong tendencies that I have that are hard to break sometimes in the way that I respond to situations, like being anxious, okay? That's a big one for me. Being worried, being anxious about the challenges that come, especially in my work. I'm still anxious. And yet Jesus Christ is my peace, right? According to scriptures, he is my peace. Boy, I would like to experience more of that in my own life. And maybe you do too. So these are small examples, I think, of ways in which I'm still growing, and I think I will be always for as long as the Lord has me here. But this sermon, I think, the reason why it came back to me and I wanted to share it with you today is it still speaks to me. I'm still a beggar seated on a bench of gold, and I want to pay more attention to that bench of gold, which is Jesus Christ, for me and for you. In him, we have everything that we need. So I'm just going to open it up now for a few moments during our open worship to pray, to reflect. If anyone would like to share something, you're certainly free to do that. It helps if you come down to the mic so that we can all hear you. So let's just leave this in the Lord's hands.